Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and delighted that you've joined us for this conversation this afternoon. And we are especially delighted to have with us in conversation former State Senator Christine Kehoe of San Diego. Welcome to iVow, Christine.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Wonderful to be here.
Thank you. And I've known you for a number of years. I know you go by Christine and Chris. Which would you prefer for this interview?
Chris is perfectly fine.
Excellent. Thank you. Before we get into some questions and a conversation with you, I want to make sure that our listeners have your background. So these are the accomplishments that Chris Kehoe has achieved over her years in political office. From 1993 to 2000, she was a member of the San Diego City Council. From 2000 to 2004, she was a member of the California State Assembly. From 2004 to 2012, she was a California State Senator representing the 39th District, and she now these days has a brand new career, and we'll get to that later. But Chris, that's quite a background, quite a list of achievements. How and why did you get into politics?
Well, thanks, Jenny. Thank you for inviting me to be here and be part of Voices of Women. I've asked that question all the time, and I always start from scratch. I really need to get a more polished answer.
We like scratch.
I arrived in San Diego in 1978. I had graduated from college, and I wanted to kind of stay in touch with my feminist roots and women's studies. And I started volunteering at the Center for Women's Studies and Services downtown near the old Central Library.
Oh, okay.
And neither of them are there anymore. Over the 3 or 4 years, I became more engaged in things like Take Back the Night and Lesbian Solidarity. We ran a women's art gallery. One thing led to another. And as time went on, more and more people would say, you know, you should think about running for office, which shocked me, surprised me. You know, it really wasn't something in the forefront of my mind. So that was around 1980. Well, flash forward to 1993, my then boss, former council member John Hartley, decided by surprise that he would not run for a second term on the city council. And I knew instantly that it was my opportunity. Although I'd never run for office before, and when they tested my name, I had 4% ID in the district. And I say these things because when women think about running for office, you don't have to be an already made big shot or VIP. You don't have to have $100,000 or more in the bank in the campaign. Those are the things that happen during a campaign. So don't be afraid to jump in when the opportunity presents itself. I would say to women especially, seize the day.
Oh, I like that.
We sometimes think it'll happen later. I can go at it another time. And that can be true because I really believe women can run at 50, women can run at 60. There are grandmothers in the legislature and there are mothers of practically newborns. Mm-hmm. When the opportunity presents itself, take the risk to go off the high dive because you may not get another chance.
You obviously took the risk.
I did.
And you had 21 years in political office, if I've added everything up correctly. So when you reflect on those years where you were serving your state and your country, of course, and your city, what do you see as your greatest accomplishments?
Jenny, I think, first of all, being in public office and winning public office is a humbling experience, and at the same time, it makes you feel very proud. When I was newly elected, I used to think, 50,000 people got up out of bed and voted for me that morning, or something like that, whatever it was around that time. I felt a strong obligation to serve the whole district. You know, you may recall I was the first member of the LGBT community to win public office in San Diego.
I do.
And there was skeptics. People thought, oh, you know, maybe she's a radical. Turns out not to be true at all. But I knew from the very beginning I wanted to represent all the people to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to keep the idea in mind that we are there as public servants. So to me, winning that office is something I'm very proud of. Continuing on and going on to the state legislature, I was able then to work on environmental legislation, on energy legislation, which led to the work that I do now. I was the founding chair of the LGBT caucus, that's the gay members of the legislature who came together to advance LGBT civil rights and support the civil rights of other minority communities. We did a tremendous amount on alternative vehicles and fuels, domestic violence. So at the state level, you really get to work on a policy that has to work for all of California. So it's a high-level position. It's the big picture. The city council, you're working for your neighbors, and I love that. Mm-hmm. You're taking care of the streets and roads that are out in front of your house. You're interacting with school children that are going to the schools near where you live. Very, very satisfying work, but I loved all of it.
Chris, it's wonderful to hear you speak so positively about your political experience, especially in 2016 when this election season has been far from pleasant, let me say. I'm trying to keep this stated as delicately as possible. What do you think of this current time that we're facing and also with the potential of having our first female president?
Well, of course, I'm thrilled that we may be making history on November 8th. Thrilled, I can only say. I certainly think that the United States is long overdue for a woman president, and I hope that the next administration is very successful. I know we've talked about this before, and I know the public is very discouraged about the partisan and, you know, bitter, rude, and vulgar words that have been used by certainly at least one of the candidates in this election cycle. And I do have a few thoughts on that. I don't really, even though we want to say it's changed, oh, it's gotten so much worse, that's really not true. And if you go back and look even at colonial times, well, immediately after colonial, when Thomas Jefferson ran for president, when John Quincy Adams ran for president, very early in the Republic, immediately after George Washington, the broadsides and letters that were circulated were extremely accusatory, including sexual attacks, not just innuendo, corruption, bribery, all that. And they laid it out. Now, the electorate was a lot smaller, and you didn't have social media, but they were still slinging the arrows and whatever else they had on hand at each other in very harsh terms. We have a 24/7 news cycle. I think people are exhausted with some of it. It's super saturation. I don't know how we change it, only as individuals. And I just want to add one other thing. When you're in elected office, in my experience, when individuals, except for very rare circumstances, when individuals approached me, the grocery store, a meeting at night, in a business, anywhere, they are usually highly respectful and understanding, and they're happy to meet and talk with you and ask, you know, how things are going. So how elected officials and politicians are treated as individuals versus the brand is very different. You know, my constituents, I've always said, are my inspiration. And the people that I worked for, my constituents, always treated me very well. Now, when I turn on CNN and Fox News and even anybody else, the radio, you certainly don't get that impression. So I don't know what the answer is. I know that even when I'm dealing with the people who are most unlike my political point of view, I try to remember that there are people out there that probably think the same thing about me. So let's just give everybody a little bit of a break.
That's a very good thing, I think, at the moment. And I think injecting that balanced thinking is extremely important. You raised a good point then when you talked about history and then talked about the politics today. I've not heard it balanced out that way before, and that was interesting. But what I think I also heard you say is that really there was no difference between you as a woman running for office or being in office than there was for a male. I just wondered if you might address that and perhaps any gender bias that you're seeing, especially in this current election season.
Good points, Jenny. Thank you. I have to say, when I was running for city council in 1993, and I wound up being the first openly gay person to win, I never felt personally attacked. Maybe I have thick skin, because the newspaper did include it in every article they wrote about me, the Union Tribune back then, different paper than it is today.
Yes.
In fact, one time they even worked it into the caption, the photo caption. So And then a year later or so, Bonnie Dumanis ran mm-hmm. and won the district attorney's office, also an open lesbian, and it was never mentioned. So things change all the time. Mm-hmm. You mentioned this election cycle, 2016, Jenny. And I do think, perhaps because the president's office is the highest in the land, the media response to Hillary Clinton has been overwhelmingly focused on her as a woman. Mostly, I think, for ill, but maybe people would disagree. And I do think it's changed in recent months. Here we are just a few weeks away from the election. But we did hear for many months whether she was smiling enough, whether she was friendly enough, whether she was emotive enough. Now they're considering the competition. I think the media is much more focused on her capabilities, her experience as Secretary of State, on health care, on children's issues, etc. I think there is gender bias. I think women, if I can go so far as to say this, I think women have a different way of working when they are in public office. I do believe women are more collaborative as a group, less interested in playing the game and scoring points, more interested in getting things done and have an ability to share. Now, I know that sounds like gender stereotyping, but I'm also speaking from real experience.
I was just going to say, I think if anybody's had that experience, you certainly have. You just raised a question for me about mentoring, because that collaborative force that women do develop is one thing, but mentoring often seems to be very important for women. Did you have someone who mentored you through your political career or before you got fully into it?
Many, many times. Mm-hmm. And I think mentorship takes many different shapes. I've had, first of all, a very supportive family. When I was working in Hillcrest in the late 80s, I worked on a city council campaign, a losing city council campaign. If you want to have a very instructive experience, work on a campaign that loses. You learn a lot.
Should I ask you more about that now, or should we just let that pass?
It was Neil Good's race for city council.
Oh, yes.
And he was a great guy, and just, yeah, I was the only person that worked for him, so everything got dumped on my desk. It was strictly sink or swim. I wanted to swim big time, worked very hard, and learned a lot. Joy Spears, the executive director of the Hillcrest Business Association, was the first person who said to me, "You should do this for your career." And I remember it hit me in the stomach. It's mm-hmm. like no one had ever talked to me about that. She wanted me to work for the Hillcrest Business Association to balance out some of my gay credentials so I would look, as I am, an open-minded person who could represent everyone. Mm-hmm. And it turned into key advice. That was maybe 88 or 89, and I ran for office about 4 years later. So it was very timely. Mm. I've had support, you know, Mirna Zambrano, she was my chief of staff for many years. Mm-hmm. Technically, I guess she worked for me, but I learned as much from Mirna, I'm sure, as I was able to impart to her. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Tony Atkins was in my office from the very first day. Tony and I working together brings to mind for me what Sheryl Sandberg wrote about mentoring in Lean In. And she says, mentoring is an organic relationship. You get as much from your protege as that person gets from you. It's a mutual, symbiotic relationship. It's not all one direction. Mm-hmm. And that is truly the way things evolved between Tony and me. And I think that's what made the experience so rich for both of us. Now she's totally on her own, going gangbusters, has already been the leader of the state assembly, and will be going into the state senate after the next election. So that relationship has changed again. But I think we really worked well together, and it was beneficial to both of us. And that's really what mentoring is about.
Mm-hmm. You explained that in a very, very interesting and a different way for some of our listeners who may not have thought of it in those terms. I was just thinking about you and when you mentioned Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins, or we think maybe State Senator Atkins after November 8, and then we have Congresswoman Susan Davis in San Diego. Do any of you have opportunities to get together and discuss what it is like for women in politics?
Getting the D.C. delegation and the Sacramento delegation together is really, it's like the stars aligning. It's mm-hmm. it's. I think one-on-one, we manage to see each other throughout the year, but getting a group of elected officials together, regardless of gender, is a calendaring nightmare, if I can put it bluntly.
Yes, I can imagine.
So we don't meet regularly. I don't want to give people that impression. Another person I should have mentioned who was very helpful to me going up to the legislature was Senator Dee Dee Alpert, who I succeeded, who is... you know, an intelligent, dedicated, hardworking, and charming elected official. Everybody loves Dee Dee, so I had great entree going into the legislature. And as far as women electeds getting together, there is a women's caucus up in Sacramento. It's bipartisan. So Democrats and Republican women meet both for policy issues, and then there'll be occasional dinners, in fact, fairly frequent. It's a great group. The dinners especially are a lot of fun, and there really is some bonding and support there because politics is, as they say, a contact sport, and you do get bruised, and it's good to circle with women to get, you know, kind of, don't worry, you can handle it, girl, kind of message.
Okay, that's a very interesting piece of information too. So bringing your career to the current day, you're the executive director of the California Plug-in Electric Vehicle Collaborative. That's quite a mouthful. This seems so completely different from politics. What took you to this role? I believe in 2013.
Immediately after I was termed out of the Senate, Collaborative had an opening. Their executive director was leaving, and I was lucky enough to be hired by them. It actually followed on a lot of the legislative work that I did on clean electric energy, alternative vehicles, and alternative fuels. You know, after civil rights and women's rights, I think one of my most fundamental commitments is to environmental health. And we're dealing not very well with climate change around the globe. We have to do much, much more. 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from our vehicles. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is our personal cars. It's not just diesel trucks on the freeway. It's where you and I drive every day. So electrification of transportation, it's just starting to sink into the consumer's awareness, but it's going to happen big time. In the next 20, 30 years, most of the cars on the road will be electric or hydrogen.
Mm-hmm. And that's driverless.
That's right. And they still have to be electric or hydrogen because you can have autonomy and gas-powered vehicles. And that doesn't really get us where we want to go as far as reducing our climate pollution. So the PEVC is a job that I love. It's important. We need to save the planet.
We certainly do, and you're very well placed and I think have all the right qualifications to do so. Unfortunately, this conversation of ours is coming to a conclusion, but I just wondered in closing if you'd like to talk about your legacy, what you believe you have left through politics, if you want to tell us perhaps if you miss politics or you might ever consider running again in the future, just give us some final thoughts.
I loved serving. Very, very honored to serve every day. I doubt very seriously I would run for office again, but, you know, in politics, you never say never. To me, politics is a living, breathing thing. I hope people remember some of the good things that I've done, but legacy really isn't a big word in my vocabulary. I'm active every day doing things that I think are important. And I think we all are, right? I would like to continue to be an active citizen. That's the way I see myself. I never thought of myself as the leader as much as a facilitator, and I still do that. I think I would like to encourage other women to run for office. It is so important. It is so satisfying. You know, it is very, very challenging work, but it is extremely rewarding work. And whatever your area of expertise is, health, children, education, business, finance, you can do it all in politics. So give it some thought.
Well, those are wonderful closing words, and it's been such a pleasure to talk with you today, Chris, and let me say thank you properly to you. So it has been my pleasure to have a conversation today with former California State Senator Christine Kehoe. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Jenny.